To be here. The work I'm going to tell you about started at a program at another math institute at the IMA several years ago. I've been working with Kathleen Hoffman and Warren Weckesser, who were postdocs there then, since. Given the limited amount of time, I'm not going to tell you a lot about the background. Almost everybody is familiar with the fourth van der Waals equation. This is the example that gave rise to chaos as a phenomenon in these dissipative dynamical systems. This is not a very good rendition of a portrait of van der Waals not too long before he died. He had an interesting career. He spent many years as the executive director of the professional organization that was developing standards for radio back in the 1930s and 1940s and internationally. So he would probably be some sort of internet executive if he were a young person today. So this is the equation that I want to talk about. The version of it. It's a simple forced oscillation with one degree of freedom. And even though this has such a long history, the bifurcations of the system in terms of the parameters A and omega, when epsilon is equal to small, epsilon is small, have not been analyzed very, very much. And Kathleen, Warren, and I are interested in developing a general theory about slow-fast systems with different time scales. And so we've been exploring, sort of discovered in the course of doing this, that looking at the van der Waals system as an example, we could go back and say a whole lot more about the structure in this system. So I'm going to talk about the specific system and there's enough stuff in this that I'm not really going to be able to say very much about general kinds of things today. Remind you that a slow-fast system is something that we write in this form, where epsilon is a small parameter. System of ordinary differential equations where the x variables here evolve fast on a fast time scale, the y variables on a slow time scale, and the singular limit is what happens when epsilon goes to zero. There's some terminology that I'm going to be using. If you look at the set of equilibrium points that you get, then that is the set of solutions of the right-hand side. So I set epsilon equals to zero. I have a differential algebraic system. The solutions of the algebraic equations are equilibrium points of the fast subsystems of the equation, and that's what I'll call the critical manifold. The slow manifold will be an invariant manifold that's close to the critical manifold. The slow flow will be a system on the critical manifold that represents the motion on the slow time scale on the critical manifold. And then a fold will be places where the critical manifold has singularities in its projection onto the space of slow variables. Here's a lovely picture that Warren made that shows the trajectories of the system. Theta is a periodic variable with period 1. And what you see in the motion of the system is that the critical manifold here is the shaded surface, and the slow flow is represented by white arrows and the white trajectories on here. And the yellow is a trajectory of the actual system. So that if you start here, you jump quickly to the vicinity of the critical manifold, and then you follow along that on the slow time scale. You reach a fold along here, you jump across to the other surface, then you follow that with a slow motion, and here you've gone a little bit past the fold on the surface, jump back, and then you come back to it again. So this is sort of what the trajectories of the system look like, and we're going to want to analyze the particularly periodic orbits that come from that one finds in this system and how they bifurcate in terms of looking at the analysis of the slow flow for the system. So I'm going to keep the equations handy. Okay, so there's a rescaling of time that one does in order to get what I'm going to actually call the slow flow in this system. Let me put the equations here for a moment. And the way in which that's derived is that we set epsilon equals to zero in the equation, and then we differentiate this equation with respect to time. And then that'll give us an equation that says that y dot is equal to x squared minus 1 times x dot. Then we replace the y dot here by x squared minus 1 times x dot. And then we rescale the equations by this factor x squared minus 1. And we get this system of equations. Theta prime is omega times x squared minus 1. X prime is minus x plus a sine 2 pi theta. And that's the vector field that we'll be studying. But we also want to retain a remnant of what happens with the jumps from the folds in our system. And so we make the convention that this is going to be what's sometimes called a hybrid system, in that when we reach x is equal to 1 in the flow, we'll jump down to x is equal to minus 2. And when we reach x is equal to minus 1, then we'll jump up to x is equal to 2. So that's what's happening here. This is x is equal to minus 1. X is equal to 2 is at the same height in this picture. And the jumps go from minus 1 to plus 2, from plus 1 to minus 2. So this is a typical phase portrait that one gets for the slow flow in the system. And there are equilibrium points in this slow flow, even though the original van der Waal system can't have equilibrium points at all, right? Theta dot is equal to omega is equal to a constant. The equilibrium points here are sort of a remnant of what happens when the direction of the flow, when it comes up to one of the folds, points tangent to the fold. And the rescaling of time gives the possibility that we give equilibrium points, and we'll see that these play a really important role in the analysis of the system. These are things that in the literature in slow-fast systems are called folded singularities. Here's another phase portrait, larger value of the forcing amplitude, and you can see that you get moderately complicated pictures of the phase portraits in these systems. Okay. So the, as I say, these are the things that are called folded singularities. And one of the issues that the more time we talk about more is that the relationship between what one sees in the analysis of the slow flow and back in the full system, and in that relationship, trajectories that flow past the folded singularities can give rise to these things called canards, in which you continue along the critical manifold, but onto unstable sheets for some period of time. And those don't show up in the slow flow equation that we're going to be studying. There may be a couple of minutes at the end to say something about that. So the first piece of what we'd like to do then is just to take the slow flow equations and to do a rather standard kind of analysis of what their dynamics are. The first thing that one can compute is that folded singularities are present in the system only if A is bigger than or equal to 1. And when there are folded singularities, that on each of the lines or the circles, X is equal to plus or minus 1, there are a pair of them. One of them is a saddle and the other is either a node or a focus. The nodes only occur for a small range of A's just above 1. What we are going to be doing in order to analyze the properties of the system is to do a further reduction to one-dimensional maps, where we'll start at X is equal to 2. We'll follow the trajectories to X is equal to 1. And then we'll jump to X is equal to minus 2, go back to X equals minus 1, go back to X equals 2. Then we'll get a mapping of the circle X is equal to 2 and theta going around the circle into itself. And we'll study those return maps. We'll introduce we'll exploit a symmetry in the system to define a half return map, in that if you switch x with minus x and you translate theta by a half, then that's a symmetry of the system. So going around the cycle with two jumps is something that you can reduce by going from x equals 2 to x equals 1, shifting theta by a half and going to x is equal to 2. And so the mapping that does that is we'll denote by H, and we'll call that the half return map for the system. There are, as you vary the amplitude of the forcing, there are three different, qualitatively different parameter regimes that we'll be looking at. When A is smaller than 1, there are no folded singularities, and in that case, you just get a diffeomorphism by following the trajectories from X is equal to 2 to X is equal to 1. And so you get a set of circle diffeomorphisms for the return maps H, and the structure of the bifurcation diagram, as you'll see, gives rise to Arnold tongues in that situation. When A is between 1 and 2, then you have folded singularities that occur. And in that situation, you end up with half-return maps that have discontinuities in them because you can't reach the segment of X is equal to 1 that lies underneath the unstable manifold of the saddle point. So here's a picture of a half-return map where A is equal to a half. You get a nice circle diffeomorphism from that. Here's what a half return map looks like when A is equal to 1.5. You're in this regime where A is between 1 and 2, and you get a discontinuity that occurs in the mapping. And then when A is larger than 2, something new happens, which is the presence of these things that are starting to call 10 points, in that if you look at the trajectories that arrive at x is equal to 2 after jumping, there's some places where the slow flow is tangent to that curve, and so some points flow up before they start to flow down again. And that means that the stable manifold of the saddle can intersect x equals 2 in multiple points. Every time you have a point of intersection, you get a jump because of the phenomenon that I just showed you. And you end up with half return maps that have a whole bunch of different discontinuities in them. So this is A is equal to 20 is a much larger value of the forcing. The tangency points, these 10 points, give you local maximum and local minima for the half return map. Those occur at points that are explicitly computable. They're essentially sine inverse of 2 over A in the equation. So we know how to work with those pretty well. Okay. So what we want to do is to look at the kinds of bifurcations that can occur in these return maps, and to numerically compute what the bifurcation diagram is as the next step of the analysis. I'll show you the bifurcation diagram and for the fixed points, and then we can look at some of the graphs of half return maps that correspond to different kinds of bifurcations. So this is a numerically computed bifurcation diagram in the A omega plane, 0 to 4 to 0 to 4, and the region between A is equal to 0 and A is equal to 1, there are saddle node bifurcations that you get. These are just the bifurcations of fixed points in the system. So these are the Arnold tons that correspond to fixed points, integer rotation number. There also are homoclinic bifurcations of a couple of different kinds in the system, in which there are fixed points at the ends of one of the branches of continuity for the mapping. And one of those types here is plotted in black. The other is in blue. So let me show you some of the phase portrait. So this is what we call a left homoclinic bifurcation, in that there's a fixed point at this end of the branch where there's a discontinuity. And here is a right homoclinic bifurcation where there's a discontinuity at that end of the branch. There's a real difference between the left and the right homoclinic bifurcations, in that the slope of the return map at one of these is infinite at the left homoclinic points, and at the right homoclinic points the slope is zero. So here's an example of a saddle node bifurcation where on this branch, there's a fixed point where you have a tangency that occurs. So let me recover the bifurcation diagram. Hold it up. Yeah, here it is. Okay. So those are the kinds of bifurcations that we observe along the different curves. And there's some other details of stuff that's occurring near A is equal to 1 that I think I'll sort of largely skip over. But what we want to do is to, that the next step in the analysis was to look at interactions of these things and to try to analyze the codimension 2 bifurcations that occur. And the most complicated of the codimension 2 bifurcations for the fixed points certainly are those that occur at A is equal to 1, so that those are at these points at the left end of the homoclinic curves. And there you have homoclinic bifurcations that occur to saddle nodes. So you have a degenerate equilibrium point that's just emerging for the system. And the trajectories in the vicinity of the saddle node points look like this. So on one side, they come down and they hit the line x is equal to 1, where they're going to jump to x is equal to 2. So they don't actually swing around and come back to the point. But the analysis of what happens with the bifurcations when you let A become slightly larger to this is a little bit delicate. One of the essential features of that analysis is that the slope of the return map at this point A is equal to 1 is actually finite. Right? I told you that at the two ends of the interval you had zero and infinite bifurcation. At the saddle node points, the return map has a finite slope, but it's very large. And if you look at a slightly larger value of the parameter, what you see is that you see a little segment now where the slope becomes zero, as it's supposed to be. This is 10 to the minus 7th on this scale. This is 10 to the minus 7th here. And then the slope becomes very large in a small interval near there. And that gives rise to some additional detail in the bifurcation diagram that you didn't really see very well. This is a blow-up near one of these codimension 2 points, and there's still more stuff that isn't really resolved happening right near the bifurcation point that's associated with the folded nodes in the picture. Okay. So that's a very quick summary of what happens with the bifurcations of fixed points in this half-return map. Those give rise to symmetric periodic orbits in the full force van der Pol system. And here's a bifurcation diagram that shows what happens with period 2 orbits in the system. So you get the period 2 Arnold tongues where A is smaller than 1. You have these bifurcations, codimension 2 bifurcations, A equals 1, that look very similar to the ones that you have for the fixed points. And then there's some more complicated stuff that's occurring. And we've looked at, in some detail, at the region that I'm circling with the pointer here in the lowest of these regions. Here is a blow-up of the bifurcation diagram that for that region. And there are other homoclinic and heteroclinic phenomena that occur along these bifurcation, along these points that are more complicated in some ways than what happens with the fixed point. So this is just here the blue is the second iterate, the green is the first iterate of H, and you can see that there is a homoclinic bifurcation at the ends of period 2, at the ends of these intervals. So these return maps for H squared can develop lots of branches. Here's an example of one, I think, where there's something like 8 intervals of continuity for H squared. And one of the more interesting of the codimension 2 bifurcations in this situation is represented here, where what happens is that there's a new branch of H squared being formed because one of these 10 points has an image under H that maps into a discontinuity for the for H itself. And you get sort of switching from one branch to another of what happens with the different homoclinic orbits. The place where the two branches of homoclinic orbits here for the fixed points cross, the homoclinic orbits of the period 2 orbits also appear to meet there. And in the sort of wedges that you get off here on the right-hand side of the picture, there are two stable periodic orbits. And these are the regions that Cartwright and Littlewood examined in more detail and showed that there was chaotic dynamics, unstable chaotic dynamics occurring in those regions. In looking at that further, this is our graphs of H and H squared at that point. It appears that there are different kinds of chaotic behavior that occur there as well don't involve the canards in the system as those that were studied by Cartwright and Littlewood do. This is the phase portrait. You can't really see very well, but there are a couple of new little branches here compared to the previous diagram that you saw. And if you take the little interval that's near the discontinuities on the right and look at the returns to that interval, then you get this picture. So you have a little interval here in which the first iterative of the return maps this little interval across this interval. And then if you look at the interval that extends from the discontinuity to the right endpoint and look at the second iterative of that maps into here. So it covers this little interval again, and you get at least at the level of analysis of these one-dimensional maps, you get chaotic dynamics that occurs there.